Welcome back, and thanks for joining us for the second segment in our two-part series where we discuss the American Rescue Plan and its interplay with the PPP. Today joining me is Mark Spain, the Hawaii District Director of the Small Business Administration, and Arnold Martinez, the Executive Vice President and Chief Banking Officer of Central Pacific Bank. Gentlemen, welcome back again.
Happy to be here.
I think you'd both agree, since the end of World War II, there's never been more programs put in place to assist the citizens of the United States or to restart the economy. With President Biden's program, we have enhancements to EIDL program, we have the Shuttered Venue Operators Assistance Program, and of course we have new additional funds and monies with PPP. So, Mark, specifically, since a lot of this surrounds the SBA, tell us what exactly is the role of the SBA today?
There are three primary roles. Thank you for the question, actually. The first is what we call access to capital. That's role number one, which of course comes through the lending window. Here with the PPP, we couldn't see a more dramatic illustration of that. The second component is counseling. That is where we work with the small business through our resource partners. We have four resource partners, soon to expand to more in the coming weeks. Those four resource partners extend our ability to provide SBA programs and services. The third is contracting. Contracting at this point deals with access to government contracts, usually at the federal level, but we also encourage state and local level contracting as well. What we want to do is get beyond the walls of our office and get out into the community and do it with new community partners that will be a part of our heritage that we've not had before.
Wonderful. Well, it sounds like you're definitely making the kind of impact you want. Now, on the front lines for the SBA are the banks. And no one has seen that more clearly than the largest PPP SBA lender in the state, Central Pacific Bank. Arnold, tell us a little bit about that journey, because come the assistance, we really got to learn a lot about what the banks were doing to rescue our communities. So tell us about PPP and how that worked for you guys.
We started back in April of last year, basically using a manual process. We had applications, paper applications. We had to digitize very quickly. But other than the digitized application, the portal that people were applying at, behind the scenes was 200 plus of our employees working day and night to be able to process these applications. And I'm really proud of our team because in the first round, we were able to get over 7,200 loans approved through the SBA to support the small business community. 85% of our loans that we did were under $150,000 in loan amounts, and 72% were under $50,000 loan amounts. So we feel really good about achieving the goal of reaching the small businesses in the community. By the time the funding ran out for the first round back
first
in
tranche,
April,
right.
The first tranche, our team worked with a technology partner to start to automate the process. And it was important to us because we wanted to ensure that whomever wanted to have or needed a PPP loan, that we were going to be there for them.
I think it's important also to note, at that time you were working from home. Everybody was learning on the job, and that doesn't mean just the SBA lenders, but that also meant the Treasury, what the rules were. I mean, I can tell you, we as a service provider assisting over 2,500 small businesses in making an application for the loan, we were all looking for clarification. How do you stay on top of those kinds of things as everyone's looking to you for guidance? I know they were.
Well, there was a lot of collaboration, but I phrased it at my standard phrase to our team was, we're building an airplane while flying it,
yeah.
Basically, and we had to do it, and that's why that the highest level of the bank needed to be involved because we needed to make decisions,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't have all of the information necessary when we make a big decision, big decisions, you know, we didn't have all the information that we wanted, but we had to make quick decisions because people were depending on us mm-hmm. to move forward. We needed to get to the 7,200 applications that we had in our queue to get the monies to the small business owners.
Now, you guys are in traditional fashion or being a little humble, but I'd like to really hear how much money, how much in dollar volume has your bank funded?
Yeah, so in the first round last year, we funded about $550 million in loans. And to date, on the second round, we've funded another almost $300 million,
wow.
just under $300
million. And Mark, of course, CPB is your leading lender, but together, aggregate, how much money has the SBA funded into the state of Hawaii via PPP?
Good question. If we take it all the way through the current period, which was the end of February, the amount of money that's been invested in Hawaii, based upon the numbers I've been provided, is over $5 billion.
Goodness gracious. Your metaphor about flying a plane and making adjustments, I think of every plane that takes off must land. And when I think about the PPP program, of course, it's pretty easy to borrow the money, but how do you get it forgiveness? And that's the second half of the story. And forgiveness, I think it's always easier to give things away than to get it back. So tell us a little bit about what forgiveness looks like, again, for the bank today, the process, what you're dealing with.
Yeah, so, you know, when we started that forgiveness process, you know, we opened our portal, I think it was in September of last year, forgiveness portal. Forgiveness was a lot more complicated than the origination part of it. There was a lot of questions around, clarification on the rules, on the timing, on what was eligible, what was not. And so it actually took a lot of time to get through all of that. And again, working with the SBA and other partners to get clarity to be able to build the portal that we built and the process that we built. Thus far, along with some good partners that we've aligned with, we've been able to process, I believe, about 3,000 applications, forgiveness applications. And last I checked, we're at about $190 million in forgiveness thus far. One of the things that I think held back the forgiveness process was everybody's waiting for action on the $150,000 and below
threshold.
And finally we did get that, of course, I think a few weeks ago, about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And so we've made some of those changes. I'm sure all the banks have in the process. And now we're starting to see somewhat of a brisk amount of
activity,
applications coming in again. And so our expectation is that everybody was waiting for those rule changes.
Right.
And now that they're in, we're going to start to see, I think, a large amount of small businesses applying for forgiveness.
The rules have been changing, forgiveness rules, right along and becoming more lenient in some ways. Mm-hmm. Do you anticipate seeing another set of, now with the PPP adjustments came out, we'll talk about that, but do you think there's just going to be more and more leniency? Because again, Congress's real intent for the PPP monies was to provide emergency aid to working class Americans and get money into their pocket immediately. That's why it was so easy to get the money. The general consensus from folks in Washington was that they really wanted to get the money out and get forgiveness equally as easy mm-hmm. too. And so it seems like they still have that mission. And I guess that is probably a really good segue though to the fraud, because in the very beginning we saw fraud. I will say to either one of you, have you seen an amount of fraud here in the state, or is it really unconscious incompetence? People didn't know what they could borrow money for or what they could forgive for. A lot of questions there, so please have at it.
Well, I'll follow up on what Arnold has said. I think the key thing here in Hawaii, we've had many concerns about certain large firms, for example, hotels that were owned maybe by foreign interests but had American companies. Some of those entities have returned the money. They didn't do it fraudulently. It was just the liberalness that was associated with the disbursement of the funds between, let's say, late June and early August, before the August 8th date set that said, okay, we can't do any more. I would tell you that the fraud investigations have probably been more dominant on the mainland than they have been here in Hawaii. But also, I think it's worth to comment on, because fraud can sometimes be purposeful, sometimes it can be misunderstanding what the rules are. But when you have a term called IFR, which stands for interim final rule, that sort of makes it comical. And so a little bit of lightness there. But I will tell you, as we've gone into 2021, the forgiveness process have been impacted by the release of the President Trump bill signed in December 27th, which said PPP draw number two would happen. Well, as a result, the people on the forgiveness portal were taken from that portal over to the origination portal so we could go ahead and once again get the loans out the door on the 19th of January. As a result, the forgiveness process was put in at the front end of the PPP draw number two, and that caused hold codes to occur. The ban of many, many activities were associated with, oh, well, he didn't have this clarity. The clarity that was sought in October and November maybe hadn't been acted upon. So before those first loans could be done in the forgiveness process, it had to be cleared. Well, we have found now under President Biden that some of those hold codes were maybe unnecessary. So the news on set today is that by the end of this next coming week, a number of the hold codes, breaking news here, will be removed from and no longer be a hindrance to processing the PPP draw number two loans. That is an example of the kind of environment we're in. Notwithstanding, we have a large agency called the U.S. Treasury providing guidance to a small agency like the SBA. Now, the employees, 80,000 people are involved with Treasury, which includes the IRS. We have 3,000. And so sometimes the elephant in the room would also dictate some of the rule changes. Wouldn't you agree, Arnold?
Absolutely. You know, by the way, that's great news about the hold codes. I mean, it definitely was, you know, delaying the approval of the applications for second draw, you know, and so that's great news that, you know, we're you know, looking forward to, you know, the efficiency through that process.
Yes. And there's more to come, probably with the new administrator now sworn in today. She will be making announcements on the 19th of March. That will indicate additional relaxation and additional encouragement to our lending community. It's important to point out that prior to COVID in March of 2020, we had 1,800 active lenders involved with SBA lending and what we call our traditional loan products. As of today, we have over 5,400 lenders involved. Do the math. That's a 300% increase and the number of lenders active with SBA lending because of PPP.
Herding wild cats is what like to me. Absolutely. So you have new funding, $7.25 billion of PPP money is available. And what we have coming up in basically less than a week and a half is the imminent sunset date of March 31st. And of course, we were supposed to be done giving out the money by March 31st. But we're just getting going now. What's going to happen with that March 31st sunset date?
Pending on the, there's actually two movements, one in the House, but the more prominent one that was stimulative was the movement by Senator Cardin of Maryland, if I'm not mistaken, Senator Shaheen, and also Senator Collins from Maine, to represent a bipartisan approach to extend to May 31 from March 31, active application processing. Some of our lenders in the state have stopped. CPB has not. They're continuing to take applications, but we're trusting that Congress will allow for the announcement, plus finish and probably take care of a few PUCAs that we have in terms of the shuttered venue operators grant that I'm sure we'll talk about momentarily.
Yeah, we were assuming that there's going to be an extension, you know, on the drop dead date for yes. applications, and so we continue to take applications in. What we found in the first round last year was that the applications that we're receiving towards the end of that first round were from those that you mentioned earlier about whether there's language barriers or they may be farmers. They may not have access to Wi-Fi, so therefore they can't go online and submit their application through our portal or another bank's portal. And so, you know, that extension is actually really important for us to be able to then get the word out further, in especially the rural areas, in that space where these small business owners, operators need more help. So that extension is really critical, I think, for that
purpose. Agreed.
So, you know, I'm always surprised when I'm out in the community, and because we've had such a deep involvement with the PPP ourselves for our clients, but I'll ask a business owner who's struggling, did you get the PPP? And they'll say, no, I didn't. And they found the process to be somewhat complex for themselves. With that in mind, what advice would you give now that we're heading down that March 31st drop dead date, and of course, hopefully for the act of Congress, we'll have that date expanded. But what advice would you give a business person that doesn't know where to start?
So I would say that it's really necessary what I've said to our team is get out there and talk to people. You know, everybody that comes into our branch, everybody that you're meeting with or not meeting with during lunch, when you're out there, talk to people, get the word out about PPP, because that word of mouth is really, really important, in particular for rural locations. And then, of course, offering opportunities, webinars, or other talks within our branches, where we can invite people to learn more about PPP. But the other thing also is just, you know, talking with the different counties, you know, reaching out to them. And, you know, each county, the mayor's offices, they all care a lot about their small business community, and in particular, you know, the farmers and those that are out of contact with what's going on. And so we found that the mayors and their teams have been very helpful in getting word out to, you know, small businesses in rural areas.
Very true. And my follow-on, because of what we have initiated under the ARP with the community navigators, we're looking at one good example in the farming community in Kenia. We had the privilege of determining really where were the problems associated with the farmers, large part of its language. A good number of our immigrant farmers that do the Kenya farming are Laotian, Cambodian, or Vietnamese. So when the Pacific Gateway Center asked us to come out and provide, we found that one of the biggest missing pieces was access to the hardware. So I have made an outreach inquiry about maybe we can get iPads for the use by the Pacific Gateway Center to wisely train them. They can't just be given and not expect to know automatically how to proceed. But that would be one example. The other example is working with the Pacific Gateway Centers, and maybe even when we talk about the Rotary Clubs that I've had the privilege to speak to several this past 2 weeks, they have an interest in the rural areas, particularly in our neighbor islands, to maybe be a part of giving that information out. Our resource partners are physically located, but the Rotary Clubs across the state, they affect almost every community. That's one example of how April, in the month of April, we'll be making changes to how we get the message out to our communities in a much more aggressive way, hence my term, Operation Footprint.
No, you're definitely expanding the footprint, and I like that. Now, Mark, my question is, sounds like you understand the SBA across the nation. Are there people just like you that are doing the same thing, or is Hawaii a little more unique because, you know, we are a little rural in our own way? And we have pockets, and it's a very large state. You know, people don't realize because of the distance from Kauai to the Big Island, it's the biggest state there is. So how is it viewed across the nation in regard to Operation Footprint?
A great question. 20% of the lending activity is associated with our Region 9. Region 9 consists of Arizona, Nevada, California, and of course, Hawaii. I think the interesting factor that we're seeing is because of, say, people like myself, maybe, who have many years of experience in diverse banking or starting new companies, there is maybe a contagion, a contagiousness that's starting to occur in our region. And in fact, in the coming months, we're going to be including some of our colleagues from other districts in the region to be a part of maybe roundtables here that the Central Pacific Bank team and other lenders in the state will be able to take advantage of. Some of the areas, particularly large states like, not Arizona, but New Mexico has a very rural population, Texas, of course, and then you have states like Montana. They're coming and letting us know how they're working more effectively with the rural. Admittedly, majority of our state of Hawaii has a population on Oahu. So are we learning from them? Yes. Is there passion there? Absolutely. But let me tell you, that passion is not just captured here. It is also something that we're seeing in states maybe that have been more open than Hawaii. Florida. Florida teammates that I work with at the district director level have really been able to say, hey, have you thought about this approach or have you thought about that? We're hoping to share that with the governmental leaders that we have here. I'm looking forward, in fact, to talking with Mayor Blangiardi about some of the ideas along the line, I think, that are aligned with what he wants to accomplish for Oahu, as one example.
Great. Well, it sounds like you're off to a good start. And I think we'd all agree we have to catalyze change. And speaking of change, Central Pacific Bank has been going under a lot of change. Arnold, why don't you comment on that? Because there's a lot of exciting things, I know.
Yeah, I'm glad to, Baron. You know, our chairman, Paul Yonamini, when he started with us in October of 2018, you know, He looked at our bank and he said, you know, this bank has so much opportunity and potential. You know, our history, you know, we were founded by Nisei Japanese veterans. It's a great story. They came back from the war. They couldn't get loans to buy homes. They couldn't get loans to start a business. And these folks got together and formed our bank. And you know, Paul reminded us about that legacy and said, you know, we need to persevere and we need to show them, make them proud, make those founders proud of us. And so we started and put together a huge initiative called Rise 2020, which basically was, you know, an investment in our future. It was a branch modernization of our organization. It was a investment in our digital platforms, and we actually announced our Rise 2020 initiative in July of 2019, and we made great traction on it. And then, of course, we all know what happened, and COVID hit, right? And of course, we went into the PPP thing and all of those things that we talked about. It was a pay it forward moment for the bank, and we all came together and mobilized. But behind the scenes, there was still a lot of work that continued on Rise 2020. And in fact, we felt very strongly when a lot of companies were saying, okay, maybe we should hold back and not spend the money. We thought, no, we need to do this. And of course we were scared. You know, we thought, well, what's going to happen? You know, the economy doesn't look good. We're getting hit hard. But we said, no, we're going to persevere and we're going to continue our investments. And behind the scenes, we made transformations in our consumer online platform. We recently launched our new business online platform. We have a new branch, downtown, our flagship branch. Who would ever thought that you could come to the bank and sit down and have coffee from Starbucks or a beer from Aloha Beer? But we have that today. I've invited you, and you've seen our branch. Love to have Mark come and visit.
Count on it.
We're very proud of it. I like to look at the branch as kind of a symbol, a trophy in a sense, of the hard work that our employees put in, not just on COVID-19 things that we had to do to support the community, but also that we persevered and pursued our RISE 2020 initiatives. It's really a symbol of the hard work and also just the energy and the enthusiasm we have about the future. And I know it's a tough time right now. I talked about pivoting from survival to recovery, but things are going to be okay. A year from now, we're going to be sitting back here and talking about how great things have recovered, because it will. Yes. We do it by sticking together and supporting each other and ensuring that we help with this recovery, help these businesses recover and get employment back and so on. It's a great time.
We'll live to see another day.
We will. It's a great time. It's a great time.
Well, I want to thank both of you for joining me here today. I always believe that small business is the engine of society. It creates jobs. It creates tax base. It gives our families their ability to prosper in our community and to live their dreams. And both Central Pacific Bank and the SBA, you exemplify that belief. And again, so happy that both of you are part of our community. And we'll meet again next year at this time, and we'll talk about the beer that you're going to serve him and all the PPP loans that were forgiven.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Baron.